The following talk was given by Steve Hagen at Dharma Field Meditation and Learning Center in Minneapolis on March 19, 2023. This talk may not be played or reproduced for profit.
Good morning.
Good morning.
It's good to see you today on this cheery day, last day of winter. If you can believe it, I don't know, it's... Looks like midwinter almost with all the snow we have this year. But anyway, tomorrow, 4:24 for us here in the central time zone, it'll be spring. At that instant, that's when the sun is passing over the equator heading this way. So, and I think this year we can be very grateful for that. But for us, it's 4:24 in the afternoon tomorrow. Well, I'm thinking of another nice, beautiful day in the fall. The story of a fellow who was driving through an area where there were many orchards. It was an ideal location for fruit trees and berries and things like that. Could be like up on the Bayfield Peninsula in northern Wisconsin. Very ideal for that, though I think this story took place somewhere in maybe New England, someplace like that. It doesn't matter, really. But it's about this gentleman who was driving down the road. He was back on country roads, small roads, just driving through this beautiful orchard country. And, or maybe wasn't just that alone. But at some point, he sees a man in bib overalls holding a pig standing under an apple tree. And so he stopped his car and got out, and he was looking at the man and with the pig. And he was holding the pig, and the trees were just laden with fruit. And there was a low-hanging apple there, and the man was holding the pig up to this apple, and the pig was chomping on the apple. And then when he finished the apple, the pig, the man moved over to another low-hanging apple and let the pig feed a bit. And the gentleman in the car, well, he had gotten out of his car at this point, and he was watching this. The pig finishes the second apple, and the man in the bib overalls brings him to a third apple, and he's chomping away very merrily. And so the man from the car, he said, "Doesn't that take time?" And the man holding the pig, he looked at the gentleman, and he looks at the pig, and he looks back at the gentleman, and he says, "What's time to a pig?" And well, come on, I thought that would get a laugh. This is probably a well-known story, maybe, so you've already heard the joke, but what's time to a pig? Yeah, we might think time isn't anything to a pig, but actually all creatures, all of us, plants too, we all keep track of time. We all follow these diurnal cycles, and even seasonal time, like here now we're approaching what we call spring. So time, you know, is kind of noted by all things, really, day and night, and the different seasons, and all the different organisms that live on this planet respond in their various ways to these changes. But for us, I think maybe we're a little obsessed with time. I mean, we clock it, we measure it, even down to very fine increments. We pay a great deal of attention to that. And of course, we speak of it in strange ways. We talk about making time or losing time or having a good time or a bad time. We talk of it in many ways. And we're very tuned into it with our various schedules and things like this. We anticipate time, remember times past. So we don't quite know what time means to a pig, but maybe it means quite a bit to us. And it's sort of, in some ways, an abstract thing, even though we're very familiar with it and we seem to use it in all sorts of ways, track it in all sorts of ways. At the same time, if we were to just consider, and when we do, consider what exactly is time? And it starts to become something rather strange, vague, can't really quite pin it down. What is time? What is happening there with time? Don't seem to be able to get a hold of it. I mean, we talk about the past, we think of the past, yeah, that was time past. But where is it? It's not here. It's not now. Or the time in the future. Where is that? Well, that's not here either. You say, well, it'll get here. But if it's the future is the time that hasn't come yet. The future never gets here, really. And the time that has passed, we say, think of it as flowing away from us, perhaps. But really, that's not here now, either. Of course, then we might think of right here, this present moment. But we can't get hold of that either, because in an instant, it's already gone. So time, once we start to look at it, what exactly is it? What is going on? We measure, even like with our bodies, we're getting older. We're no longer the little children we once were. And all of that has changed. And time fits into that picture, certainly. Or we can anticipate getting old. So it's very much a part of us in all sorts of ways. And the creatures that live around us. And yet, what is it? And we really can't get hold of it. It's kind of mysterious. There's a lot of things that are like this that we probably generally don't notice. With time, once in a while, I think perhaps all of us have paused at times and just thought about it and how strange it really is. Or is it strange? I mean, it seems so familiar, and yet when you try to pin it down, what is it? And it's hard to get hold of that. In fact, I would say it's impossible, just of its very nature. And same thing with understanding or knowing what is happening, what is taking place. It seems pretty straightforward. We're just tuned in, either that or we're not. Nothing too mysterious about that. But if we start to look at it, it starts to become kind of strange or untouchable as well. Like yesterday, for example, I came over here in the middle of the afternoon, and usually on Saturday there's nobody here. Though occasionally it might be one or two people, but yesterday when I came in, I came in the side door over here. As soon as I opened it, I realized there was a rack of chairs that was missing. First thing I just noticed, it wasn't even that I saw it, I could feel it. It was just, there was usually a mess sitting right there, and it was gone. And so I thought, well, I wonder, what's going on? Is there something taking place here? Is there, the chairs set out, in the room here, as you're sitting in those very chairs now, and the missing chairs, I should say. So I thought, I didn't recall that there was going to be anything, but I don't, I'm not the head here anymore, and I'm not on top of everything. So was there something going on? But it was very quiet. It didn't sound like anybody was here. But I went over to the door, this door here, and I just very gently opened it, just in case there was something going on in here. People were see, sitting quietly and not making any noise, but no, there was no one here. The chairs weren't set out at all. And I thought, okay, I wasn't too terribly surprised by that, but then and I stepped into the room here then. And by the way, when I was thinking all of these things, I wasn't talking to myself about where are the chairs. I wasn't using words. That would take too long. This is what was occurring in my mind. And noticing this or noticing that and having an impression but just kind of wondering what's going on. So I stepped out this way and I wondered, would they be out here in the library? There'd be too many chairs to set up in the library, but maybe the rack is out here somewhere. It was not there. And I looked over toward the basement stairs, heading down out the doorways here. And I thought, well, that doesn't make any sense. Nobody would have taken them downstairs. Not that easy to get them down the stairs with, in those big racks. So it was starting to seem a little strange, a little mysterious. A little whiff of a thought passed through my mind that, did somebody take our chairs? That seemed absurd. Why would anybody do that? And if you did take them, why did you take half? But then I thought, well, maybe they only needed half a rack, and maybe we loaned them to somebody. But again, this is just quickly flitting through my mind. And then as I kind of turned back, and I realized, well, they've got to be in the office then. And so I went back in there, and I opened the door, and sure enough, there they were. And then the thought was, why? Why are they in the office? Well, because it's heated. See, this room back here isn't heated, so the chairs would be kind of cold, but there they were being kept nice and warm in the office. I thought, and David, Mary and David are the Marys of Dawn on Friday night, Zazen. And David assists her in that, and also when they close up, they always do a very fine job closing up the building at night on Friday. But again, this all just kind of flashed through my mind, and I thought, well, David, the thought was there that with David, out of the kindness of his heart, he brought the chairs, a rack of chairs into the office to warm up so that you guys would have warm chairs to sit on Sunday morning. So anyway, then I went on about the business that I came over here for and didn't think anything more about it, really. But no, I want to take you through this again, just take a look at what was going on there in terms of, I'm interested in this notion, this idea, this word knowledge. By the way, right now I'm teaching a class on, it's called Understanding and Using a Vocabulary of Enlightenment. Well, that title has been shortened to just Vocabulary of Enlightenment, but I think it's important, that other part. Understanding and using words in a way that the awakened might speak, might use words. That's what this course is about. So we're looking at different words. We will be. We're half through it now. You can still sign up for it if it interests you at all. But that word knowledge, knowing, what do we know? When I came in the door yesterday, I did not know, say, that the chairs would not be there. And it was a little odd that they weren't there at that time. And though I didn't panic at first, I didn't really panic at any point, I guess, but I did get a little curious there briefly, but I didn't know. And then I speculated. Again, it was very quickly. I wasn't thinking in words exactly, but very quickly it was like, is it being used without using the words? Just wondering that. Gently opened the door to check, and that wasn't the situation. And now I'm curious as to, well, where are these chairs? So this, just this curiosity is there. I don't know that I would ask myself, where are these chairs? I already knew that this is the curiosity. It's just right there. We don't need to use the words for it. You may or may not, but. And then just checking out a few things, and the various things that I said passed through my mind, and speculating. It would seem the one thing I knew at this point was that the chairs, well, can I say they were missing? In the end, no, they weren't really missing. So it's not exactly knowledge. I didn't know that the chairs were missing. I didn't even really believe that the chairs were missing. But curious, what, you know. And then when I opened the door, and before I got to the door of the office, I realized that the chairs had to be in there. Is that knowing? I know the chairs are in there. But no, I didn't know. But it sure seemed like that's where they would be. I mean, where else would they be? But if I was ever pressed on it, I couldn't claim that, you know, I know this. And I went into the office. The office was locked, but I had a key, and I went in. And sure enough, no surprise, there's the chairs. And it seemed a little odd, because I don't recall that we normally put chairs in there, but it's surprisingly cold lately in that room. Of course, it's colder in the dead of winter, but. And then, very quickly, it was just, well, David must have put him here. Now, I don't know, even now, and even as David sits there, I don't know. That, but I not only, oh, okay. But there you go, you see, and I don't know. And but more than that, I even speculated on what might be going on in his mind. You know, that he was thinking kindly of us here on Sunday morning, and the building wasn't going to be used until then, and why not let the chairs warm up? Of course, now I'm wondering, well, did Jed do this? I don't. But this thing about knowing, and what do we know? And what is it that the awakened would say when they speak of, what are they talking about when they speak of knowing? Is that the same as what we might casually call, or what, maybe not casually, but we seriously think this is knowing, that I know this or I know that? What you can know is your own mind. And you can know when you're speculating, when you're acting on belief, which isn't knowing at all. And were we to act out of a true knowing, well, this is what the awakened would call knowing, because it actually is knowing. But most of us don't pay any attention to what it is that we know, because we spend so much of our time giving our attention to what it is that we think, what it is that we believe. And we speak out of this, we use words out of this, and even maybe misapply words, like, for example, even the word knowing. So in my writings, when I'm writing about this, I use the word knowing, usually in a very typical way, just small k and all of that. But this is not knowing to those who are awake, what we normally call knowing. It's believing. It's having an idea, a theory, an hypothesis. It's speculation. Maybe it's wishing, strategizing. There's appropriate times for much of these, you know. So when I was speculating that it might be David, I knew I was speculating. I knew that I didn't know it was David who put the chairs in there. And it would have been fine if you had, I mean. But I know, and I try to keep track of what it is that I know. I know that I don't know that David. It was just me trying to come up with a plausible understanding of it. And I wasn't spending too much time with it because I knew that I had no access to that. And in this particular case, it didn't matter that much. But there's times when we can convince ourselves that the situation we're in maybe matters a great deal, and we'll go chasing off thinking that we know something that we do not know. It's perfectly fine to speculate, to have some sense of what you might be facing or what needs to be dealt with here or whatever. But it's so easy to lose sight of the fact that that's what we're doing. We're speculating. We're trying to explain. When it comes to the world of this and that, you can't explain anything. Even our great philosophers and scientists, they realize, well, the great ones, they realize they don't explain anything. People think that science is there to explain the natural world to us. No, it doesn't explain anything. It just looks into how it appears. And it appears that this is acting upon that or whatever. These are descriptions of things, not explanations. How would you explain gravity? You know, we can describe gravity and how it works and operates and the various laws that it seems to obey and all of this sort of thing. But what is it? Why is it? You know, we can say, well, it seems to be an attraction. Yeah, we thought that Newton thought that. But then Einstein showed that no, it seems to be the curvature of space, time. Time, space-time, it curves. And now just recently, just in the last 10 years or so, they've gotten to the point where they realize that actually there isn't time. There isn't something called time. What it is that we're trying to refer to as time, there doesn't seem to be something. It's not the most fundamental thing, or space for that matter. So what is there? Well, then now they speculate again. And of course, actually, if they continue to play that game, they'll always find something there, smaller than time or space. Time is made out of, space is made out of. And you might think, well, that's the fundamental thing. But I can guarantee you it won't be, because if we understood the way the mind works, we wouldn't chase down those rabbit holes, because you'll never get to the bottom of it. The world just, it simply isn't this way. And we know this. This is true knowing. We know reality as it is prior to our speculating on it, commenting on it, describing the effects of this or that. This is knowledge. In writing, I would refer to that as, with a capital K. Knowledge. We might be looking at this word. I'm saying quite a bit about it now, so maybe I won't spend too much time with it in the class. But that's knowledge. That's true knowledge. This is what the awakened realize and understand as true knowing. With realizing that, you can begin to see that this is the actual perceptual experience. It is not our conceptualized, constructed world of this and that, which always involves speculation, and we can't get beyond it because it doesn't arrive at true knowledge, true knowing. Knowing, by the way, too, that I would italicize that if I were following the ways of just trying to distinguish that these words aren't being used in the way we normally use them. It's all the awakened, people who have awakened to the actual understanding of this reality, This is all they're using, though they might not necessarily write them out this way. But it is a different kind of knowing, what's what I would call true knowing, true realization. And it is possible to wake up to this. You all have this knowledge. You all have a direct experience of reality all the time. It is impossible to be without it. If there's experience at all, there is knowledge of that, direct knowledge. But it is wordless. You'll never put it into words. You'll never explain it. You'll never describe it. The moment we put it into words, as Juan Paul says, the moment you conceptualize the experience, put it into a form that now you can put a label on, now you've lost it. You've lost track of what it is that is directly seen, heard, felt, realized, understood. You put it into a form that you can believe, into a form that you can think is true, and that you can grasp. And then you can feel, oh, I know. But you don't know. No one does. But the awakened are those who wake up to just this very problem that we fall into, because we don't understand the nature of the immediate direct experience. We don't understand the nature of mind, consciousness. But that's what I'm trying to help you with. That's why I'm teaching this course right now. The question there is, in that course, is what is it? Well, not so much what is it that the awakened know, but given this awakenness to actual immediate direct experience, how do you even begin to speak then? Or think? Write things out? How do you talk? This is the question. And it will not be the same. It could be, I suppose, once in a while. But basically, for those who see Dharma, reality, and speak Dharma, they're not speaking in the way we ordinarily speak. They don't use words in the ordinary way. This is why we have the sayings like Dogen, when he says, cease from practice based on intellectual understanding, your conceptualized understanding, following words and chasing after speech. Why would they say something like that? Well, I'm trying to give you some indication this morning as to why they might speak like that. Well, the moment you turn your mind, you turn away from this knowing. This shows up in all sorts of ways. In the class, we looked at some words that the Buddha used, like paticca-samuppada, dependent arising. That word, if we think, was dependent arising, so this depends on that. And we're using it in a very conceptualized way. We don't understand what he's saying. That's a word that refers to something that hasn't happened. It's a word that, of something that isn't going to happen. It is a word that's pointing to happening in this moment. All this moment has come to be as it is now. It's not frozen. It's not in time. It's not, when I say frozen, I mean it's not something persisting through time as we might think. We think this of ourselves. I am something that's persisting through time. Yeah, what's persisting? Your body's continuously changing, and so is your mind. Nanosecond by nanosecond, it's changing so rapidly and so thoroughly, you can't get hold of it in any way whatsoever. How does one who sees the world this way, rather than as persisting things, including people and myself, how do you speak of it this way? This is why the Buddha spoke. He didn't say I. He said Tathagata, which literally, if you break it down, it's these different words in Sanskrit, they break down into coming and going, thus, all crammed into a single word that the Buddha coined. Coming and going thus. Coming and going how? Just as it is. As we can see it, as we can realize it, as it actually we do realize it. You know this. The problem that we have is that we so quickly want to grasp it and put it into words, into ideas, beliefs, explanations. It isn't wrong that we do this or bad that we do this. Or we shouldn't. I'm not saying we shouldn't. You need to do that. We need to conceptualize. We need to use words in a conventional way. But what we don't need to do is to believe it, is to believe that somehow these words, these phrases, these ways that we put things actually captures reality. It simply does not. And we know this. And we can wake up to this. And realize this. And in realizing this, the things that otherwise can greatly vex us and trouble us in all sorts of ways, these things simply do not arise. Not with the tenacity and the vigor and the solidity or whatever, the force that they might otherwise do for us. When we think that the way we frame it, the way I see it, this is reality. No, that isn't reality. Reality is of a much more subtle nature that you cannot grasp, but you can see. And I even go so far as to say that you do see this. You need to just allow your mind to settle and to realize what it is that you don't know. When you walk into a room and you speculate on who moved the chairs or where they are or something like this, or even worse, when you speculate on the mind of the person who you think wrongly, perhaps, and I gave a case where apparently that was the case, you think wrongly of it, but you're putting even motives into the mind of the person. And it wasn't the case at all. But you believe it and you act out of it. This is the pain, sorrow, misery, confusion that we live out of all the time, day in and day out. It is possible to wake up from this. It's really not even that difficult. But you have to begin to see what the problem is. That's what I'm trying to help you with here. That's what I'm trying to help with that class on using a vocabulary of enlightenment. Because the way we speak and carry on really strengthens the way that we just continue to carry on with our grasping. So that's what I wanted to point out this morning, that there's a way out of this difficulty. And in fact, actually, you're not even really in this difficulty. But we tend to see it that way, and therefore, there's our reality. And it is a kind of reality. You know, but we give that a small R. I would give that a small R, reality. It's not reality with a big R. Reality with a big R is not an issue, not a problem. It's just a matter of waking up. And it is a matter of waking. It's not a matter of figuring it out. There's nothing to figure out here. It's just a matter of actually seeing things correctly, without speculation, without you, in fact. That's what this practice is. That's what these teachings are pointing to. It's of a very subtle nature. So be careful when you read, particularly when you read actual, correct Dharma teachings. There's a lot of stuff that passes for Dharma, but it's ordinary understanding, where the world is very solid and it leaves you with the sense that you are also something particular, when in fact you're not. You're not frozen at all. There's nothing particular. You're not the person that you were when you walked into this room a while ago. That's gone. That's past. It's not here, it's not now. We'll be looking at words like here and now in the class as well. Okay, well, maybe I've said enough on this morning. Do you have any questions about anything I say here? Anybody out in Zoom land?
Thank you for the talk. I guess one thing I'm wondering is, you first walk in the door and you notice that the chairs aren't there, and you had said that at first it wasn't even that. You notice that there's chairs missing, but there's just like maybe a spaciousness there that you're unaccustomed to. Mm-hmm. Would you call that sort of that initial, before the chain of inferences start, and you start speculating about, well, what's the space you look because of the chairs, well, where are the chairs, who are the chairs? Would you call that initial sort of noticing, even before it's articulated, would that be knowing, or is that already too broken out to be knowing?
That's the whole thing with my example. None of it is knowing. Yeah. Knowing with a capital, or knowing I would italicize. But that's something else. This kind of knowledge I was speaking of with a capital K, or knowing with an italicized, it's knowing the actual situation, which doesn't involve chairs, being there or not being there, or any of those things at all. But another thing it helps with, though it's not, this is not required, but it certainly does help with uncluttering your mind. Because I didn't say, oh, the chairs are missing in my mind. I wasn't saying, oh, the chairs are missing. Where would they be? I wonder, would they be, is there something going on in the other room now? And I wasn't using words, at least not very much, if I was at all. And you could easily do this. Watch the clutter in your mind and the jabbering in your mind. And gradually, that can really reduce. But more than that, far from it being like, well, now I'm not going to really understand what's going on, and if I don't say something to myself about it, no, that's not really true. Because you can really tune in the actual stuff that you're picking up on here, which is pointing very closely toward in the direction of true knowing, is just that very thing. And as soon as I opened the door, I realized the chairs weren't here. But it wasn't even just that I saw that, I could feel it. That's another thing, you start to see that more than just your eyes or your ears, whatever seems to be the pertinent sense that you need for whatever is going on here, it isn't just that alone. You know, all of your senses can be participating in this. But all of that is still in the realm of conceptualizing, but it's moving closer to, it's like why I often use the example of tasting orange juice. You know, say you've never tasted, you don't know the taste of orange juice. Well, my telling you, anybody telling you what it tastes like, you get the poet and they're describing it in beautiful terms, and the chemist describing the molecular structure, you know, all that stuff, and or the neurologist, you know, on and on you go. Nobody can explain it to you. Well, they can. They might explain things. It feels like explanations, but they can describe how things are interacting. But the actual tasting of orange juice is in the tasting of orange juice. You cannot apply words to it. But now when I'm talking about knowing, then, italicized or capitalized knowledge, I'm talking about that understanding. And that can stay with you. It can drop away too, and back into this ordinary sort of thing, but you can recall it. If you start to realize what is actual knowing, and what is otherwise a speculation or belief, and these, again, these things are important. It isn't like don't have any image in your mind of this or that. No, I'm not saying that at all. That's very functional in many ways. The mistake is in thinking that the way it's been framed up there is true. It certainly isn't ultimately true, but it's not even true. This is why we have, like in the precepts, the fourth precept, where we say that a follower of the way does not speak deceptively. Well, when you realize that pretty much everything we say is deception, well, you can break free of that deception if you know that it can't be framed up in language. That's why we then have Bodhidharma chiming in and saying, even to say a single word is to violate the precept of not to commit false speech, something like that. Because we can't put it into words. And if we really know this, and there's the actual knowing, is to know that, then you will speak differently than you would otherwise. You know. But this is what I'm talking about. So it has nothing to do with it. I open the door and I'm seeing the chairs and this. And yeah, I'm noticing all of that, you know. But there is no framing of it. You know, and it's really not necessary to say that much to yourself. You know, somebody once said, we were talking about something like this before. I'm talking about walking along the lake and then there's ducks there or whatever. And if a duck crosses in front of you, you don't need to say duck to yourself. I mean, the word might pop into your mind, maybe, maybe not. But there's knowing. But the true knowing is not even a duck. You know, it's objectless, actually. And even the, you know, but I'm probably going further than I need to go here. But the depth of the subtlety to this is really quite incredible. But first we need to start to notice what it is that we're speculating on, what it is that we're framing up, and then believing. Frame it up if you need it. It might be functional and helpful. Just don't make the mistake of thinking this is ultimately right. Well, and then we end up believing certain things and we fight to the death over it. We're absolutely insane, you know? We human beings and what we do, you know? And we do that in mass and groups and also we do it in our personal lives. And it's possible to live without doing, not to live without conceptualizing, but it is possible to live without clinging to that, insisting on not knowing its nature, which is always enwrapped in, to some degree in deception. It's good just never to lose sight of that. Yes?
How would you articulate the value of increasing your capital K knowledge or knowing?
You can't increase it. It's full right from the start. And as I said, you already have this. And it's true knowledge of the whole works, really. But it's not broken up into parts. It's objectless. We talk about objectless awareness. So it's not necessary to augment that in any way. It can't be done anyway. But really, I think what you're asking is how do you sense that? How do you wake up to that? How do you start to realize that?
Waking up to it more.
It keeps you from stepping into a lot of potholes. How's that?
That's great.
Might make more sense on a winter like this. But it's so easy to get our lives entangled in all sorts of painful situations and then where we have no idea what to do or how we got into this situation. And it helps with that completely, really. It isn't like the potholes disappear, but you're constantly tripping on them, stepping into or driving into them, I guess maybe. That's where the picture changes. Really, everything stays the same, even though everything appears to be changing. But that situation out there, that's not going to appear any differently, in a sense, other than it's our understanding of what's taking place. In the class last Tuesday, I used this example. It was in one of my books where it was a one page. There's a square of black and white dots, or they're just little flecks if you look at them carefully. But they're just scattered in there, and it's just a page of that. You don't see anything if you just look at it in the ordinary way. But if you kind of, normally our eyes, the two eyes together are kind of turning together to help focus. It's also done with each eye individually, but there's a certain kind of turning of the eyes to focus on a particular point at a certain depth. If you undo that, I think I explained in the book how you can loosen up on that, and you allow your eyes to be focused more as if it was looking at something farther away, all of a sudden, there's this ring that appears floating in space above the page, and through the ring you see some words. And then behind is the backdrop of the page itself. And so there's depth in it. Now, this is just an appearance. And we want to say, well, is there really a ring like that? In other words, behind it? Well, what does that even mean? It looks like there is, but when we start to see correctly what's going on, everything is going to appear kind of like this. And then to ask questions like, well, is this real? Well, what does that even mean? But here it is. And that's how we can see this world. Here it is. Is it real, ultimately? Yeah. That's a question that doesn't even really make sense. But what I'm doing there with that page, I was trying to help the reader to realize that there's a way of looking at the world, a way of realizing our experience that's not the usual way where we just see the flat page. We don't see the words written on that page. We don't see, and they're not really written on that page exactly. Where are they? And then, of course, people speculate, well, in the eye, the brain, all this. Don't go there. But it isn't just a page, a flat page. And it isn't that there's a ring there, and there's some words further in from the ring, and then there's the page further back still. There's no point in saying, well, it is this or it isn't that. And that's the analogy I'm trying to help the reader realize. This is an analogy for how we actually experience all of this. We see it in a way where we can wake up in such a way that we realize that what meets the eye and where we normally were with everything isn't all there is. There's something else going on there that, like that page when we're just seeing the dots, we don't see anything at all. We don't know if there's a ring there, we'll say, you know, and there's words. We don't see that at all. And that's analogous to what I'm trying to point out here. But we can see this in totality, and, you know, this is how we're living out our lives. Either we see this or we don't. And what I'm saying, it is possible to wake up to this because we already do see it. Just as we already have the vision, if you have two eyes, you can, this little experiment that I have on that in that book, you can do this. You can see that depth that otherwise doesn't meet the eye. And like so, I'm saying that there's something more going on here that we normally miss. And I could say a few more things about it, but not having enough time to clarify, I would only probably confuse you. So I won't say anything more here now. But it is this sort of thing that we're exploring in that class that I'm doing right now. Did I help you with that at all? Yeah, okay, thank you.
Thank you for listening. To hear more talks on Buddhism, Zen, and related topics, visit dharmafield.org.